Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. This week's podcast is brought to you by Show Me Hemp and One Voice for Ag. One Voice for Ag exists to bring agriculture industry associations together and find common ground to speak with one voice for the good of agriculture. On this week's program, we'll hear from Brian Trainer of Hemp Processing Partners in Greeley, Colorado. We'll also hear from Justin Swanson. Justin is the Midwest Hemp Council president and also principal at Bose Public Affairs Group and of council at Bose McKinney and Evans. Before we get started, a couple of notes about the Midwest Hemp Council. The Show Me Hemp Conference, scheduled for March 1st in Jefferson City, Missouri, will be on with the Midwest Hemp Council's Jamie Campbell Petty speaking as part of the roundtable discussion. That conference also has a virtual option, and you can check all that out on the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. We also want to point out the Midwest Hemp Council's Hemp at the Crossroads webinar series. The first webinar will be February 19th, entitled Equity and Diversity in the Hemp Industry. Those interested in registering can go to www.MidwestHempCouncil.com and click on the Events tab. Also, the Midwest Hemp Council's 2021 Hemp at the Crossroads Conference has been postponed until December 1st through the 3rd of 2021, but this will allow us to extend conference programming by another half day and extend early bird discounts through April 15th. Of 2021. Again, more information on the MidwestHempCouncil.com website. Now let's get started with this week's podcast and Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council president. Find out what's going on with the Indiana legislature regarding hemp-related topics and bills. Justin, how you doing? Thanks for being on the program this week.
I'm great, Jason. It's almost Friday. How are you doing?
There we go. That every time we talk, it's almost Friday. So that's always the bright part of the week.
Absolutely right.
All right. So, but before we get to Friday, we've got Thursday and Thursday's podcast day. So let's get on with that. And when we get you on here, Justin, it's always good to get information and updates on the State House, what's going on with the bills and legislature involving hemp. What's exciting and new this week?
So we have we had a historic vote on Tuesday in committee on House Bill 1224. If you'll recall, Jason, House Bill 1224 re-legalizes the projected $300 to $400 million craft hemp market for our Indiana farmers, our business owners, and other entrepreneurs. So this comes at a time, obviously, when the whole hemp industry is searching for profits and profitability.
There is such a thing. We'll get there one day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I get asked quite a bit on, you know, what exactly is craft hemp flower and why do people smoke it? You know, again, the simplest terms is this is just another delivery method of CBD to the human body. And it comes down to consumer preference. So some people like to use tinctures to put under your tongue. Others like gummies. Other people like to vape it. Now we happen to have the most lucrative market or lucrative product on the market now that our farmers and our small businesses are shut out of.
Well, it seems to be with the government trying to push people away from cigarette smoking, the medical community pushing people away from the cigarette smoking. It seems like that smokable hemp would not be as much in demand as maybe it is.
It's an interesting comment because if you actually look at this data, the vast majority of consumers of craft hemp flower are already tobacco or cigar consumers. Mm-hmm. And so what you actually see is this is actually being used as an off-ramp from nicotine addiction. There's also studies out there that show having access to low THC hemp products like craft hemp flower and CBD oil actually reduces the amount of opioids that are prescribed and used in a community. That's kind of why we don't like the negative connotation of the term smokable hemp, right? Because it just has a negative connotation. And we're trying to change the terminology to really highlight the fact that these are entrepreneurs, these are farmers, these are small business owners who have found a market, found a demand that's actually helping people.
And again, there's a, we won't go into it, there's a huge difference between cigarette smoking and craft hemp flower smoking. Of course, the chemicals are what makes the difference, not the inhaling of the smoke itself. So I guess I really hadn't considered that, but I guess you could see a lot of people moving over to craft hemp flower as opposed to buying that pack of cigarettes.
Right. And I think, you know, Indiana is not the only state to, you know, kind of tackle this public policy question on how do you handle this product. You know, I would suspect a lot of that opposition is coming from the fact that hemp in general and craft hemp flower specifically at the core root of the issue, they're market disruptors, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You are going to be taking market from somebody anytime you offer a new product in the market.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really, really excited about House Bill 1224. Like I mentioned, it got a committee on Tuesday with a vote of 9-4. We had 4 Republicans vote against it, unfortunately, but it did get out of committee. And today, on Thursday, the committee report will be adopted. And then we're really looking at next week. We'll have the action will pick back up. And our members, I encourage you to keep an eye on your inbox. We'll be sending a detailed report out later today.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I can't stress this enough, Jason, this bill will not pass if Indiana legislators do not hear from our members, other farmers, small businesses and entrepreneurs on the need for the bill.
In other words, if they don't think that there's a demand for it, they're not going to waste their time with it.
Exactly right, because we have state police who are proactively working against the bill on the guise that, you know, literally telling legislators you might as well just legalize marijuana if you do that. Which, you know, I understand our membership may be split on that issue, but, you know, from my perspective, it's a trap that we don't want to fall in.
Mm-hmm,
We're here talking about a federally legal crop, and we're here trying to get access, grant access back to our farmers and small businesses on a lucrative market.
And the folks that voted against that bill likely are law enforcement leaning folks, or did they obviously don't have to give a reason why they voted against something, but you mentioned 4 Republicans voted against it. Were they vocal about it, or just maybe they were ignorant of the whole concept of hemp?
Well, unfortunately, I saw several letters that went to each 4 of those members from constituents, and they chose to really go with the state police over the constituents, which mm-hmm. is, you know, ultimately their call, but we're going to be asking for those 4 members, you know, to be changing their minds on the House floor. And that's why I mentioned, just because it didn't work with those guys, I know for a fact it flipped a couple votes on committee because you had constituents reaching out to a legislator and asking them specifically for support on something. And that's happened. It doesn't happen as much as I think people realize. And so when it does happen, it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So although we had a successful day on Tuesday, that's our first obstacle of many more to come. The legislative process is slow moving with lots of obstacles in the way. So again, I encourage you, even if you've reached out to them once, reach out to them multiple times and ask for their continued support on the bill.
Well, the one currency that a legislature has is votes, and they are constantly in search of more votes. So if you do contact them and let them know that if they agree with your stance, then you'll probably vote for them, and that would certainly help push it along a little bit. But again, we always stress, be mindful of the fact that, the honey works better than vinegar, so always be polite and just use it from an educational point of view that you're instructing these folks, not berating them.
And don't go in assuming the legislator has any idea about the issue. Although this is a popular issue at the state house, if you're not on the committee that the bill went through, you probably haven't been exposed to what's been going on in the bill yet. So just approach it like you mentioned, Jason, from an educational perspective, and localize the issue for them and say, look, I'm a third or fourth generation farming family. We're constantly looking at ways to diversify our income. We'd love to have access to this new market and find out how we can, monetize it for our business.
Mm-hmm. All right. Again, that's the craft hemp bill, craft hemp flower bill. That's 1224. What else is on the floor right now? What else are we discussing, Justin?
So there's another really interesting concept that's being floated in the Senate right now, and that's Senate Bill 201, authored by Senator Young. And what it does is it provides for a defense to somebody who gets into an accident that wasn't their fault and later has to have a blood draw and they, if they have THC, if they only have THC metabolite in their system, it's actually a defense from being charged with operating a vehicle while intoxicated. So Indiana's current law right now is zero tolerance. If I'm consuming a legal low THC hemp product here in Indiana, such as CBD oil, and it's a full spectrum, and I consume that, there's a chance that you are going to, you know, pop positive on a drug test. There's a chance that if you get in a wreck, and let's say your company or whatever requires you to do a blood draw anytime you get in an accident, and that THC metabolite shows up on that result, you're looking at a felony charge if you get in a wreck and cause an injury. So Hoosier consumers are exposed to liability right now. The conversation during committee focused on consumers of marijuana going to our neighboring states and purchasing and consuming there and then coming back. You know, other than federal law, they did not break any state law while they're there consuming. And so that's kind of how the bill is being framed right now. And legislators are very, very cautious to do anything like that. And so we're going to be working with the bill author and the committee to help them reframe the conversation as a way to help protect Hoosiers who choose to consume a legal product here in Indiana and get it away from the marijuana discussion.
Wouldn't this kind of straddle that line with marijuana users also, that they would have that in their system? And so that would, is that the counter argument that would give them the green light to be able to get out of situations like that?
Yeah, and I'm just trying to have them reframe it and focus instead of going, you know, because, you know, especially in the Senate, I think there's a much cooler reception to marijuana generally. So they're much more hesitant to do anything with it. So we're going to be encouraging really the committee to not think about marijuana, but think about these CBD products that are legal in Indiana that people are consuming, and they are exposed to a felony charge right now if they take, you know, CBD regularly, a full spectrum product, and they get in an accident. So we're really just trying to frame it as a consumer protection issue for CBD users, and we'll see if we're successful.
And people that do consume marijuana, the given time is what, 2 to 3 weeks or something like that, the THC would stay in your system up to a month maybe. Is it, would that be the same with hemp? Is it, does it matter the that it's such a low concentrate to begin with?
So that's the thing, is it's different for everybody, right? It depends on the product. It depends on the person. It depends on the person's, you know, health habits and diet. And this is, THC metabolites unique because you can have it, like, as you mentioned, you can have it show up in your system up to a month later after you consume it. So the mere fact that you have the metabolite in your system does not equate to you being intoxicated. Now, like other, you know, take meth, for example, right? If you use meth and it shows up in your system, you're more than likely still under the influence, right?
Okay.
And you're intoxicated. With THC metabolite, again, you can consume it a couple of weeks ago, and it has no bearing on whether you're intoxicated or not. So it's a unique property because it does stay in your, you know, your fat lipids longer than most other substances.
Right. Well, and again, a way around, I mean, all this is, it boils down to the police officers having to differentiate between marijuana and hemp. So if they just legalized all of it, that would just solve the problem here, and we wouldn't be sitting in this donut. But that's not what is up for discussion at the moment. So we do have to go through the weeds and find that path for the hemp users, growers, and sellers.
Absolutely right. And, you know, I think that day will come at some point sooner rather than later. But right now we're focusing on, you know, purely on the hemp side because it is a legal agricultural product. And again, we're just trying to have our farmers get access to that.
And Justin, are you seeing in general, are you seeing the legislature in Indiana moving along the right path, going in the right direction for the hemp industry?
I think so. Absolutely. I mean, if it's night and day from 2 or 3 years ago, most of them are educated on the issue. You know,
do you find a lot of them that use hemp or use CBD, anything like that?
Yeah. We have, there's a strong contingent of legislators who are, you know, who sell it in some form and who use it. So they understand that, you know, I always try to avoid the medicinal properties of it just because it's kind of a rabbit hole that you go down and you only have so much time with legislators. And I just frame this. It really just comes down to consumer choice, right? If there's a market for it, and we're supposed to be small market or, you know, small government Republicans, the supermajorities over there, then just get government out of the way and let it happen. Mm-hmm, that's really the message.
What response do you get from that?
It varies. It varies on the legislator and their personality. Mm-hmm. You know, some don't like that we're even licensing people on some of this stuff. Other, you know, so that's one extreme where, although it's not entirely accurate from a legal perspective, they think you should be able to get the seeds and grow it wherever you want. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, you have people who view hemp still as marijuana, and they're going to die on that hill until they leave office.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else, Justin?
That's all I had for you, Jason. I'll let you go. I would just really, really encourage everybody listening who lives in Indiana to contact your representatives on more than one occasion and be on the lookout. We'll have a nice infographic that goes through our members that kind of shows where the bill is in the process now and kind of the path forward.
Excellent. Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin is also the principal at Bose Public Affairs Group and of counsel at Bose McKinney and Evans. Always some great information. Justin, we'll look forward to more in the future.
Thanks a lot, Jason. Always appreciate it.
All right. Take care. All right, next we have Brian Trainer. Brian is with Hemp Processing Partners in Greeley, Colorado. Brian, how you doing today?
I'm really good today. How are we doing?
Doing fantastic. Appreciate you being on the program. We talked to quite a few people from out Colorado way, and seems to be a big hemp area out there, so we're very happy to have you on here. Now, Brian, let's just get started right off the top here and tell us what Hemp Processing Partners does there in Greeley, Colorado.
Yeah, and I'll start a little bit at the beginning because I think it kind of follows the hemp industry this last 3 years, right?
Sure. Right, right.
But we are an engineering company at our core. Our company was started out as United Precision Engineering. So as a company, we were engineering a facility for a feminized seed grow. And one of my engineers who had worked with a lot of different agricultural, he worked with Petkus Machinery, Wintersteiger, and all of our manufacturing, which is in Colorado here, but mm-hmm. he'd been in the seed industry for years, saw how they were cleaning the feminized seed and called me and said, hey, would you mind if we imported some stuff? I think that, you know, I think we might have this solution for these guys. And so about 3 years ago, we brought a couple of machines over from Austria, and it just sort of worked, right? It worked really well for that fin seed side. Mm-hmm. We were able to get seed clean. I don't even know how many times, but I mean, to the point that like when farmers saw it, they said, I can't believe that, you know, this took me 4 weeks and now it's taking me 3 days, you know, mm-hmm. and it's better. And so we started really cutting our teeth on that feminized seed side, which was a great market then, right? It was worth it. The money was there. And, so we did a lot of that and then pretty quickly went from that, to seeing a problem with outdoor grows that were getting seeded, right? So now we had a way to get seed out of the flower. So on a small scale, you know, guys were going, hey, cool, if you could do this with a lot of flower, this would actually be really beneficial.
Right.
And so we ended up partnering or by getting hired by a couple different grower/ kind of extractor groups and designed a bigger system that used traditional mechanical separation and aspiration that you'd see in a normal farm ag. But we sort of ran it backwards, right? Because in the normal ag world, the seed is gold and the flower is trash, right? And in hemp, at least at that point, the seed was otherwise useless if it was in an outdoor grow just for CBD flower, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But our flower was gold. And so so we figured out that solution there and were able to scale that to where, you know, our bigger systems at that time could take in about 10,000 pounds an hour of threshed flour and clean it. So you'd pull out that stick and stem and that seed and get yourself a consistent kind of what we called conditioned flour. So that when you had that flour in a super sack, it was ideal for extraction. And the extractors really were who pushed us eventually because it was such a better material to extract. Right.
Right. Right. So, right. And this was at your location, right? Or were you going to remote locations?
We actually put machinery in for multiple locations around the country.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we've installed all over the place. And
off the top of your head, how many locations would you say are out there that you guys are facilitating?
Probably 9 to probably 10, 11.
Oh, okay. 12. Okay. And this is all over the U.S.
It is. We haven't got anything really big on the East Coast because we sort of sold to our backyard right off the bat,
And do you have these around in any of the Midwestern states?
We did. We just, and I apologize because I don't know exactly where, but I think we just did an installation in Illinois.
Okay.
We got connected from New West Genetics, who we've done a bunch of work for and cleaned most of their stuff, connected us with a farmer that had grown. And so so what happened with their system is it comes through the drying system actually, and then feeds directly into our cleaning system that we take that bulk flower stick stem that's been either threshed or somehow otherwise removed from the plant. Mm-hmm. And we clean it up. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And so you were up and rolling with this, what in year one or two, when did you kind of hit your
stride? It sort of went immediately. As soon as we did our first research kind of, hey, we think this might work. That went immediately to, hey, let's start cutting steel and get something built. So we manufacture, mm-hmm. We have we partner with Kice Manufacturing in Wichita, Kansas, and then another company, Genesis out of Kansas City, Missouri. And then a couple of pieces we import, from Austria and Germany as well. Mm-hmm. We have a couple small pieces we build ourselves, but it really doesn't make any sense for us to build. It's better for us just to have the pros do that. And really we spend most of our time figuring out how to move air, really, you know, most of our work's done with air. It's not a lot of physical separation, right? It's mm-hmm. a lot of, mm-hmm. And you're just classifying material just like you would with anything, right? It's everything's got a property, right? So flower is lighter than the stick and stem and the seeds. So it'll move off. And most of these guys that have grown hemp and done this for a long time, they know that, you know, they get that on a basic level. All we did was make it bigger, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Now you've also went outside the United States with this.
Yeah, so we've gotten some that we've bid out of the United States, but nothing that's been shipped, nothing that's big that's been shipped out of the U.S. yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we've bid a couple and a little bit of that, and I haven't listened to the last podcast, but I know if you're in hemp, we all know kind of what's happened the last 18 months, right? But we were commissioned on a couple of big projects, and those got shut down by those governments, right?
So
we've been sort of stuck sitting and waiting and watching with some of that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And really, I mean, we're excited to see what's happened. So that was where we started. And then for the last year, we've really allocated almost all of our resources to the decortication side of the business. And so that decortication line will be, we've pretty well run it. We feel good about it. So we're going to set it up permanently at our Kansas City location. Mm-hmm. We think in the next month or so, and, you know, we should have something we can show and tell with.
Okay. So, and go ahead and explain to folks what decortication is.
Yes. Yes. Decortication. I think that it depends on how far you want to really take it, but at the simplest level, it's effectively separating that bast and that herd, in a way that allows you to then have a usable bast and herd at the back end of that, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I would say that decortication by definition means that you've got a usable fiber and a usable a herd material that is left behind, because you can separate herd from the plant, but you might have destroyed any usable fiber in the process, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that's really the challenge. So taking that hemp, that industrial hemp stock, and effectively and at volume separating the herd from the bast.
All right. And before we move forward, how can folks get a hold of you for more information about this?
If you go to our website, hempprocessingpartners.com, www.hempprocessingpartners.com, and through there you can either email us or just call us directly. We're not a big corporation at this point. You can get one of us on the cell phone, right? And so the worst case is you'll land with the guy that manages the machinery in the seed cleaning lab, or you'll get one of the engineers or me, right?
right.
And so we're not big in that way, but we're basically built out of two engineers, one a former NASA engineer, and I say that jokingly at times, but he in the truest sense is a NASA engineer, right? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Meticulous and slow moving at times, but it's good when it's done, right?
There we go.
So that's how we're built. You know, we're an engineering company that saw a way to help. And really our objective always was that we wanted to see a farmer, because all of us grew up in the farm ag world. And we knew, like, farmers don't want to get out of the tractor. Farmers do not want to weed by hand or cut a plant down with a, with a chainsaw or a
lopper. Right. It's 2021. So, yeah, we don't want to be doing that if possible.
Exactly. So that was always our focus, was to make it really farmable, right? And so that's been our goal. And you know, and in some ways, we, you know, when you can clean 10,000 pounds of flour an hour, you may or may not shoot yourself in your own foot, right, in the hemp industry, because that produces a lot of clean flour really quickly in the market, right? So there's that other problem. There's,
well, the supply and demand, of course.
The supply problem that we helped create a little bit of an influx of too much supply, you know, I mean, and there's companies that we help, you know, put up that they'll produce 10 million pounds, you know, out of their one operation of flour, you know.
Brian Trainer. Oh. Brian is with Hemp Processing Partners in Greeley, Colorado. Brian, let's step back even further. What got you personally involved in hemp? You said you've been a longtime ag person or a lifetime ag person. What got you actually involved in hemp? Why did you say, hey, I'm going to pop these seeds in the ground and see what happens?
Yeah, exactly. So, and we never popped any seeds in the ground, right? We're one of those guys that that we landed between the farmer and the extractor from that engineering perspective. So we, you know, United Precision Engineering was the company that started this thing. It was one of five companies that I own and help operate.
Okay.
And so we're invested. We have construction-based companies. We have marketing-based companies, and then engineering. And from the engineering side, you know, we knew, so being in Colorado, we had our eye on the hemp plant. We knew there was something there, but there was never anything that fit that was an easy downhill move for any of my companies, right? So I am in the most true sense an entrepreneur, and that could, you know, that's, I don't say that in maybe the most positive way, right? It's my own, it's a pain in my ass, but it's how I like to show up, right? I love seeing a problem. Hemp has plenty of problems to solve. Mm-hmm. And so it looked fun. But there was really we never saw a place for us to land in it until we saw what we saw when we were building out that facility. Right. And as it started to scale, we said, well, we can help with this middle portion here where, you know, we think we can make this. And I didn't know any of this. The engineers did. Right. And they said, hey, this can work. Right. We're basically going to run the engine backwards. We're going to keep what's normally trash. And it worked. Right. And so it was one of those things that we said, let's just play with it a little bit. And then, you know, 6 months later, I turned around and went, like, oh my God, like, this has become a full-time job for me and for eight other guys, you know? And so I don't think it was something that we definitely did not go into it thinking that what it looks like today. I mean, I had no idea what decorticaton was, right, 3 years ago.
Sure.
and it's about all I've thought about for the last year. So,
and do you put a majority of your time into the hemp processing partners?
I do. Yeah. That's where I spend the majority of my time. Mm-hmm. It grew faster than we'd expected. It's a different industry altogether. Manufacturing is a different world. We're mostly a research and development business, right? So we at any given time have three or four different projects going on. And as we figure things out, then the genetics change, right? And so we see a different genetic come out, and that makes us change the way we approach the plant. We see different harvest methods. We see different drying methods. So all of those things create, say, another lane in what we're supposed to kind of be figuring out in the industry. So,
yeah, you couldn't have asked for a better timing than for an engineering company with people that are involved in the ag industry to have a completely brand new industry just pop up out of the blue and be able to get in from the ground floor.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it really is very cool. I mean, it has its own stresses that come with any new business. Mm-hmm. But it's been really fun to watch what comes out of it. And yeah, I mean, we got really lucky in the way that we happened to have, you know, two guys that really had been sort of around the world in the farm ag engineering, engineering side of that, I guess. I don't know a better way to put that, but, but so we did, we just kind of happened to have them sitting there together. You know, I had bought that company, just to have the engineering resource for the construction side. So I was trying to turn a couple of mechanical guys into construction engineers, and really never even got there. You know, by the time we really got sort of going, the hemp thing popped. And, so it's been a fun adventure. I mean, and I know it's been stressful. I talk to guys all the time that are struggling, you know, but that's just part of the deal. Right. And I think you kind of have to look at it and go, there's going to be problems, and, you know, and it's that's what creates opportunity though at the same time.
And again, with on one hand, with the popping up of the hemp industry and the ability for somebody like you and your partners to be able to jump in and take advantage of it, we also had COVID hit, which was something that affected everybody one form or another. So you had that as a huge obstacle there. But now that we're, I guess, getting past that, or at least it seems that we're getting past that, what do you see coming up here in 2021, not only for you with Hemp Processing Partners, but just the hemp industry in general?
I think one thing we are seeing now is that with the attrition of a lot of the companies that were in the business, we're seeing the people left over are the ones that are going to stick it out, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. They were either really well funded, or they had a good idea, or they just were running a real business, right? They had actual profit and losses, and they were looking at their numbers and they're projecting where they may or may not go. And so I would say that if you're still here, good for you, right? You've earned it, right? But then we're also seeing sort of a co-op model showing up, where we'll have talked to, say, one company about the decortication side and what they're working on, and another company. And then 2 months later, I'll get a call back and they say, hey, we've actually joined forces, right? And we're going to go do this together. Mm-hmm. And so I'm seeing a joining of forces and a little bit of a, like, kind of a natural vertical integration that's happening amongst four or five guys that maybe were trying to work independently before. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what we're going to see. I don't think we'll see like a full on, like, takeover of two monsters show up and do it all, maybe. But I really don't. But I think we will see some regional kind of cooperation start to happen around the hemp plant. And I think that's going to be a really positive thing. I don't think we're going to see a lot of trailblazing anymore. We've figured that out, right? I think if somebody's listening, they're thinking about starting growing hemp. I mean, don't just, you know what I mean? You don't have to wonder, right? You can come to Colorado and ask 20 farmers,
right.
How'd you do it? And tell me the good and the bad. Like, please don't go out and just, you know, without doing your homework, try. Right.
Right. Well, as you said,
ask some people.
As you said, we're only 3 years in, which is an infancy stage, but yet three years is a lot of information and research out there.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I always talk about how much life you put into your day actuarially, which is, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, somebody can fit a lot more life in a 24-hour period than others. And I feel like I fit a lot more work in the last 3 years than I probably ever have in my life. My brain is constantly hurting, right? It's like I'm surrounded by engineers and farmers that should have been engineers, right? Some of these guys are so daggum smart. It blows me away. I mean, you know, and you got a farmer that runs a multimillion dollar business on the back of an envelope, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And that's his ledger book. And these guys are sharp, you know, they're good. And so it's a cool world to get to really learn. And I've really enjoyed that. The people, especially, you know, it's been rough on some guys, but it's really been neat to kind of get to meet and work with some of these groups we've got to spend time with. So
that's great. Now, Brian, I know we barely just scratched the surface here on what you guys do and everything out there, but is there anything else that we can hit on with this conversation that we have not hit on yet?
Man, I think the biggest thing that I've been working on lately that is a pain point, right, in my business, is just the supply chain model that we need to get working on as a sort of a bigger team in the hemp industry. I think the more we can see people step in in the most positive sense, help create a supply chain. We don't need more brokers trying to put themselves between this guy and that guy, right? That just hurts.
Right.
But we need direct work together. everybody in the decortication side, we've got a number of people kind of going, hey, once we find some offtakes, then we need this equipment. You know, but we need, you know, we need this and we need that. And it's like a little bit like we're trying to be the chicken and the egg and the omelet, right? We've got to be all three. And it's really tough, right? Uh-huh. And so we just need to work. If we want it to work, it has to happen on that supply chain side. You know, so I think we just need a better, so it's more of a contiguous model that would allow people to really flow through. We need to identify spec on the backside for, and I'm speaking to decortication, because I know from our end, we've got the CBD flower thing figured out. That's easy. You know, now there's plenty of work still to be done on kind of getting a consistent product on the crop side and consistent CBD and all kinds of other, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Stuff to do with like testing. And I'm not even going to touch on that because that's not my world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from our end, it's a supply chain thing. I think we need to know what spec is, right? I think for us as engineers, and I say us, but I mean, the engineers kind of look at it and go, tell me what you need to hit, right? Because a lot of guys, well, I want to decorticate. And they're like, well, cool. What's that really mean, right? to what level, to what standard, what are you going to use it for? Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's it need to look like here? And we're seeing guys have success though. We've got one guy that's, they're producing like a Trex type decking, and really doing very well with that. And they're using stuff that we run through the mill. You know, we're seeing fiber turned into yarn, right? That we go, okay, cool. Now if we can do 100,000 pounds of that a month, we're good, right?
So
a big problem is that I think the industrial side of the world, the manufacturing world, wants to use hemp, right? I've met with some monsters in that world. They want to use it. We just have to have somebody produce it at a volume and to meet a consistent spec well enough that they can say yes, right? So
And that's the key. That's the key. The volume and the quality that needs to be consistent out there, so that these companies can put their faith into it, knowing it's going to be constantly supplied to them.
Right, and we will see that come up. I think we've helped a couple guys get going that I think we'll see them pop up. You know, we are doing our best to sort of get a kind of prototype facility put up so we can help meet some spec and then provide machinery to meet said spec, right? So but it's a big old elephant to eat, right? It's you know, when it started out, you know, it was, if we put 25 or 30,000 into a project, it was a lot. And now if we can keep it under a couple hundred thousand, I'd be really happy, you know. And so it's just bigger, and we've had to grow with it. I've had to grow with it, right? So personally, and you're right. And then, you know, we went from what, 35 bucks a pound down to $1 or $2 a pound for flour, and COVID in the middle of that. And it's just been a really interesting journey here. But I feel like it's going to be really good. I really do. I think that what we're going to see shake out is that the guys who are doing it right are going to stick around, you know. We'll see the extraction, we'll see the demand, I think, for just CBD oil in general go up, right? I think it had a little bit of a flash, and I think we'll see it like kind of level out and come out at a healthy spot.
Right. So. And that's the side where the demand side has to meet the production side. Right now, I think there's a little more production than demand, but I guess could be argued either way. However, again, you don't want that demand to be there too soon, because if you can't fulfill that demand, you start getting bad products out there, and that can turn people off. Yes. They will never come back to the product again, i.e. the gas station CBD.
Yes, absolutely. And the same with the investment dollars that we saw early on, that's going to go away too. So now that we do have a healthy, you know, we have a healthy market, and I think a healthy industry, and a really plant that's just hugely beneficial. When you start to look at it from the farmer's perspective, I mean, you go out and talk to farmers that are trying to make it go with beets or soybeans or corn, bringing a plant to them that can even beat that by a little bit. It's a huge deal for them, you know? And that's also, we need to see the USDA, you know, step up. We need to have the ability to insure this plant and borrow against it, right? And once the bank starts playing, that changes my world and everybody's world, right? Mm-hmm, we need actual banking for this stuff. So, I mean, it's funny. I'll meet a banker in a local community. We're looking at doing a system, and he goes, "How can I help?" I'm like, "Loan me some freaking money, man." You know,
right? Why are you sitting across there? Exactly.
Yeah,
that's what you're here for.
You can do to help. Yeah, do what you always do, right? To see this market, see the industry do what it has done with no banking involvement is amazing, right?
And not only no banking involvement, but I know early on a lot of banks would not handle payroll processing, payroll checks, things like that, anything to do if you were in the hemp industry.
And we've all heard the stories, right, of guys that were running good business, and then U.S. Bank calls them and says, "Hey, you got to have your money out of here by Thursday," right?
Right. I had to change bank accounts in order to cash a check. So, and I readily did so because, if you're going to be, you know, an enemy of this industry, then I'm not going to bank with you, and literally changed my bank because of that.
Absolutely, man. So, I mean, I agree. So I think that I think that's it. I think that where I'm really focused now is we know from the technology side we've got the decortication side figured out. We can do it at scale. It's great volume. What we've essentially designed is a hemp refinery, right? Where and somebody else has that name, so I can't call it. I don't know if I can call it that or not, but that's what it is in the most truest sense, right? You can bring in any version of the plant. And we're going to break it down into those same fractions, whether it's an industrial or a CBD sort of driven crop, that you're still going to get your pile of flower, either loose or pelletized. You're going to get your seed sort of in a super sack or sacked or whatever, however you really want it from there. And then the stock, stick, and stem, right, runs through the decortication. You're going to have your your herd and your bast sort of bundled up and ready to go. We don't have any intention of making anything out of that. We just want to be able to help somebody be a good, like, high volume commodity supply chain kind of piece of the puzzle, right? And so, yeah, I mean, that's where we've been, right? And we've been out in your guys' part of the country a little bit and made good connections with some people in the Midwest, which, I mean, we love all of it, right? I mean, we love everywhere it's going. And I think there's the good thing about fiber is I think that, well, two things. It has to be done by a real farm ag operation. So I think once fiber comes, when it comes in, and it is coming in, I don't think we're going to see this big boom. We'll see farmers grow more than they need because that's what farmers do.
But
it has to be done right, right? And you have to be able to then process it at the backside. So you're not going to see kind of little bits here and there. And I think you're going to see more consistent spec out of the fiber world. And once we can go, I mean, we've looked at contracts that one of our systems would be occupied 24 hours a day for just one contract, you know? So it's like when it's there and it's good, right? Because that industrial world is just, you can't even keep up. We wouldn't even be a blip on the cotton radar if we started to push in on that, you know?
Well, like you said, we're 3 years in and we're looking pretty good right now. And it's because of folks like you and everybody out there that isn't in it for the money at this point. They have the drive to succeed and the drive because, again, it's just something new. You mentioned being an entrepreneur. That's a big difference from being a business owner. An entrepreneur is somebody that gets out and kind of smells the air and decides which direction to go and just doesn't use the roadmap to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is very fun. Right. And this is one of many that I've had to help start and get up and going, but it's definitely been the most fun. The big problem, like I said, that big problem creates lots of opportunity. And so you try not to look at that and go, hey, I wish there weren't these problems, because that's really where that opportunity comes from.
Well, there's just a satisfaction in solving a problem or just being somewhere that nobody else has been, the exploration of it and just doing it and saying, I did it without anybody telling me how to do it and nobody's been here before.
Yep, absolutely. And then it's got to convince the money guys on the back end of my businesses that I'm not full of shit. You know what I mean? I'm actually going to do this thing. So,
those darn money guys, they always get in the way and
mess things up. I don't even let them in the same building, right? I go like, hey, money goes over here and sales goes over there. Production goes over here.
Those two people
aren't allowed to talk to each other because that just slows a business down.
There you go. Absolutely. A true entrepreneur, Brian.
Yeah. Sometimes I cuss it, but it is. I mean, I try not to use that word because it gets thrown out around a lot, but that's where my soul lives. And I love it, man. I love the business. I love the relationships and the people I get to learn from and work through, you know, and there's been a lot of really cool people I've got to work with in this business.
And I think that's why the hemp industry is where it's at and in making the advancement and strides that it's making is, again, people like you and just people all over this country that are pushing it. And again, they're doing it for financial gain, but they're not quite getting that gain yet. And hopefully that door will open and that light will turn on and all that will happen. But it's folks like you, Brian, that make it happen. And we do appreciate it. And you've been some great information this week, and we do appreciate that. And once again, Brian Trainer, Hemp Processing Partners, and again, that's www.hempprocessingpartners.com, correct?
Yes, it is.
Excellent. And any other way they can get a hold of you? I assume the phone number is on the website.
You want to go ahead and give
that out right now in case they're driving along and want to give you a call?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd have to pull that up on my end because I don't have it.
You don't go to the website very often, do you?
Go to the website. No, I don't, buddy. It's 970-707-3030.
Okay, go ahead and give that one more time.
Yep, 970-707-3030.
There you go. You can give them a call, talk with Brian or anybody else there that can help you get that ball rolling. Brian, once again, we appreciate the great information, and we hope to be able to get you back on the program here soon and find out what's going on and get some updates out there from Colorado.
Perfect. Hey, anytime, and thank you for the time and energy. Much appreciated.
Great, and we will talk to you soon, Brian.
Yes, sir. Take care.
All right, and that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for tuning in. This week's podcast is brought to you by Show Me Hemp and One Voice for Ag. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next time. So long, everybody.